Roberta Blevins, and this is Life After MLM, a podcast where we worked in the stigma of failure in an industry systemically designed for you to fail. Join us as we dive into the real-life stories of survivors, experts, and advocates, as we debunk the common myths and fallacies of cults, frauds, scams, and multi-level marketing. Hey, Hunbots and Hunbros. There have been a ton of TikTok videos that I have been summoned to recently, and they all start with somebody saying, I was at Target or Walmart or the mall, and this person started randomly complimenting my outfit, my bag, what I was buying, and was really weird. And does anybody know what this is? Has this happened to anybody else? And I keep getting tagged and I immediately comment and say, it's Amway, this is definitely Amway. And it is. And if you've ever been approached like that, then you probably also know that it's Amway. It's just happened so often. And then there's this really strange thing that happens on this podcast where the interviews that I'm working on behind the scenes somehow always seem to coincide with the current events when the episodes finally get produced. And so I'm really excited to share this episode specifically because we talk about something that Amway likes to call the process, which is this weird, strange meeting out in public and complimenting and following a hun to a second location. This is a fun one, but I do want to give you a couple content warnings. We do talk about evangelical cults. There is mention of pet death, but no details, and mention of drug use, but no details. I also want to welcome the newest members of the Patreon, Kristen Lahan, Marjorie Weidauer, and Eva Eigler. And I am so sorry if I butchered any of your names or mispronounced them, but welcome to the Patreon. It's so great to have you. And speaking of this whole Amway process and getting approached in random locations, I've got an extra little story for you if you're up for it. And then after that, enjoy the episode. So, Michelle, we're actually doing something kind of new this year, which I think is really fun. I've had a lot of people reach out wanting to do advertising stuff. And since I have like a big network, I thought it would be more fun to do sort of like small business spotlights. And so you and I talked about it and we kind of came up with this kind of fun way. If you're an ex-hun or an ex-culty or somebody that just listens to the show and has a little small business, right? Like a real small business, we want to help get the word out. And what better way than to throw it on the podcast for eager listeners who are looking to support non-MLM businesses?
Absolutely. You probably get this feedback, but my favorite style of your episodes are generally like the ones when people come on and they're like, and then after I left MLM, here's how I turned, you know, my experience into a superpower. And here's what I'm doing now. And I can help you guys figure out this and that too. I really, really love seeing like ex-huns doing things. And I honestly, I don't know if our first small biz shout out actually was in an MLM or is just really anti-MLM. Either way, awesome. But that's kind of where the idea originated.
Absolutely.
It was just getting the word out about ex-huns and their legit small businesses who can't afford advertisement.
Right. That's the other thing, because like corporate advertising is expensive. And I want people to be able to be like, hey, I do this really cool thing and I'm no longer in an MLM, or I don't like MLM, so I'm never going to recruit you into one. And it's like a cool, safe way to support people where you're not like, oh my God, is this person like selling a scam on the back end? And so, yeah, so this idea of a small business shout out was born. If you're a small business owner and you want to be a part of this, just hit us up and, you know, we can work something out. Our very first small business shout out is actually from this lovely woman named Starla, who owns Star Crafts & Co. on Etsy. And she makes the most adorable anti-MLM stickers ever. Which stickers did you get, Michelle?
Oh my God. Okay. I got two of her, I don't want to say plain old anti-MLM because they're so cute. Her like main set, I guess. There are two, I got two triangle shaped stickers and one of them says proud MLM dropout, which I am. And it's so cute. And it's like holographic. And then I got another triangle shaped one, which I love always, that says I'm unrecruitable, hun.
I got the same ones. I got the proud MLM dropout in pink and I added that to my anti-MLM water bottle. And then I also got an I'm unrecruitable hun. And then I asked her to make me a cool car sticker.
Starla's just such a sweet lady and sent each of us three stickers, I think, to kind of get a feel for them. Packaging, absolutely amazing. 10 out of 10. Everything was so cute and just like perfectly well, you know, it all fit in there. Cute. I also love that she does like holiday themed sets of stickers and designs too. And she also has pins, I think, and stuff like that. I got an Easter themed anti-MLM sticker. Like, where are you going to find an Easter themed anti-MLM sticker? So I got this one that has this cute little bunny in a basket of eggs waving. And it says, don't let MLMs hatch in your life.
So my big sticker that's going to go on the back, it's a vinyl sticker. And it says, fueled by anti-MLM commentary, which I felt was very fitting.
Oh, perfect.
Very cute. Her packaging is great. Her stickers are super high quality. That was one of the things I was like, oh my gosh, this water bottle gets wet all the time. It's always in the sink and the sticker holds up super, super good. It's super thick, really good vinyl. All of her orders come with a vinyl decal application guide. So if you've never used a vinyl sticker or you're kind of confused on how to apply it properly, she has this really great guide. And then she also wrote us these cute little notes. And I wanted to read this note just because, you know, it just made me feel good. So I wanted to read it for you guys. It says, hi, Roberta, you and so many other anti-MLM advocates inspire me daily to create new designs and items to help uplift other people. A smile from a single sticker says, there's somebody else who gets it. My desire is to help others create more awareness behind MLM and spread light with a little sass. Here's to 2024. Sincerely, Starla. And I just thought it was so cute. So if you guys are in the market for anti-MLM merch, there are really, really cute stickers to sort of give, you know, your anti-MLM personality a little pizzazz on your water bottle, on your car, on your notebook, wherever you stick it. And, you know, I haven't had anybody try to recruit me since I put this on my bottle. So who knows? There's a positive right there too.
Yeah, it's a repellent. I'm unrecruitable, hun. There's no point. I'm unrecruitable.
Absolutely. You can head over to lifeaftermlmpod.com and Starla has created a coupon code for our listeners. On orders of $10 or more, you can save 10% with the code Roberta Rocks. That's R-O-X. And you can support small business and be anti-MLM at the same time.
Absolutely.
Check that out on the website. And if you buy a sticker, I would love to see it. You can post it in Discord or tag me on your Instagram stories so I can see all the really great things. And don't forget to tag Starla too. She's the one here that really matters.
I know I will be.
Absolutely. So thank you so much, Starla. And you make the cutest anti-MLM sticker. So you guys really got to go check it out. Okay, Kayla. So it's really interesting because you and I have been working on this episode.
Yeah.
Which talks about a very specific thing.
Yeah.
And it's been coming up a lot on TikTok too. And so when I saw it on TikTok, I was like, oh my gosh. And then you edit this episode and then you come home one day and you say to me, oh my God, I have a story to tell you.
Oh yeah.
So everything is a full circle moment on the show, I feel like.
Definitely.
Tell us what happened to you.
I was pitched for Amway products at Walmart. I finished this episode the same day that this happened to me.
So you were prepared.
I wasn't prepared. I didn't know this was going to happen. I have never met anyone in Kentucky who is an Amway. It's like there's a lot of essential oil boss babes around. Oh, Avon and Mary Kay and Pampered Chef. Those are like the staple MLMs in Kentucky right now, I feel like. But anyway, so let me set the stage for you, okay? I'm walking through Walmart parking lot hand in hand with my almost four-year-old son, and we're going towards the entrance of Walmart. And at the same time as us, another woman with her two kids is also approaching the entrance to Walmart. And so I kind of let them in front of us, and I noticed her because she had green, blue hair. She was like wearing Converse, and she had a Jack Skellington Loungefly, which anybody doesn't know what that is the little Disney mini backpacks. It was super cute. So I was like, I would be, you know, cool with her. I'd be friends with that. That's like exactly my flavor of cool. So I noticed her and I let them go in front of us, and her son turns around and says hi to me. To me, I'm thinking it's a kid. Kids do stuff like that, you know, even though I had my son with me, he said hi to me. Thinking back on it, it's like, does that mom take advantage of her child's like willingness to socialize in order to pitch her products to people? Maybe. Like, you wouldn't think she would cajole her child to say hello to strangers. But she did take that opportunity. So he said hi to me, and I'm like, hi. And I told his mom, like, hey, I like your backpack. Like, that's a cool lounge fly. So she stops me, which I was super surprised for, not expecting, in the entrance to Walmart. So we're like half inside and half outside the building with her and her two kids and her shopping cart and me and my kid. And people are like walking around us. And she's like, I have to show you this. She's like, look at my backpack. It lights up. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, that's really cute. Okay, have a good day. You know, I thought the interaction was over. And her son was wearing a dinosaur shirt. And my son was also wearing a dinosaur shirt. They looked like they were about the same age. I don't remember how the conversation got there, but I was like, oh, that's a cool dinosaur shirt, buddy. You know, just because Leo, my son, was paying attention to him. And it was cute. Whatever. Like, harmless. It seemed like such an innocuous interaction, even though she stopped me in the entrance to Walmart. I thought that was kind of awkward, but...
It's kind of a weird place to stop a random stranger, or just really anyone, really.
Well, awkward. I was like, okay, bye, have a good day, you know?
Yeah, move to the side.
Right, exactly. We were like trying. Even my son was like pulling on my arm the whole time during this interaction. Even he is like, we're in the way. Come on, we gotta go. And she talks about her son's shirt. She's like, oh yeah, I just can't keep it clean. I'm like walking away from her, right? I'm trying to get out of the way. I'm like, yeah, I know how that is. Like, he's four, right? Like, right. He's about that age. And she was like, let me tell you about the best stain remover.
No.
That was her Amway pitch. And I'm thinking like, oh, she's going to tell me it's like Dawn dish soap and baking soda, because that's what I do for stains and it works just fine. And she came right out and said it, which I was super surprised. She was like, yeah, it's an Amway stain remover. And me not thinking, because in my world, anti-MLM is like normal. I kind of felt bad after the fact, but I laughed and I was like, oh, it's Amway. I was like, oh, that's so funny. And she... Like, that might have been a little insulting. I didn't mean to insult her. I was just like, oh, that's, you know, that's funny. No, thank you.
Wow. She didn't say anything about the business. She just like used that moment to be like, oh, gee, I can never keep that shirt clean until I tried this product.
When you're in an MLM and you have interactions with strangers in public, you really got to milk it.
Right.
And you got to find a way to make that connection. I'm so glad that like I can see someone like her and pay her a compliment. And now I'm at a point in my life where I'm not doing that
for like nefarious purposes. I'm not trying to pitch her my Young Living essential oils or whatever. Like, I'm literally just saying, hey, I like your hair, your backpack. Something very freeing about that once you get out of MLM. But when you're in an MLM, you have to like really, usually it's the other way around. Usually it's the MLM hun like complimenting a stranger about something random and using that as their gateway. But it was her son that was like her gateway into having a conversation with me. From the moment we started talking, and I wouldn't have known this, she was looking for a way to connect it to Amway. And I just was like, no, thank you. And then she didn't talk to me anymore. We kept like running into each other awkwardly at the store after that. But she didn't like say anything else to me. Maybe it's because I laughed when she pitched Amway
at me. She was like, oh, she's one of those haters. Like, and, you know, it's funny. Like, I haven't been pitched in a while, but I I did get some Color Street nail products for Christmas. So, like, MLM still creeps in, even when we're actively aware and actively avoiding it.
Yes.
It still finds a way to creep in.
That's so, the irony was so good. I texted you immediately. I was like, you will never believe. I just got pitched for an Amway product at Walmart.
Oh, so good. Well, thanks for sharing.
Yeah, of course. I had to tell you about it. Oh, wow.
Welcome back to another episode of Life After MLM. You guys are going to be so excited because guess what we have today? Yeah, another Amway episode. These are always a favorite. You guys always ask for Amway episodes. And every time we have an Amway episode, I get a lot of Amway emails that weekend. And we book more Amway episodes. We're focusing on Amway this year specifically. We are going down these rabbit holes. So if you have a story, please reach out to us. But I would love to welcome to the show Lacey Galeer. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's a rainy day. It might get a little wild. Like, it's gotten loud enough that the microphone will pick up the rain. So maybe I'll leave a little in if it's really nice, you know?
To add some ambiance.
Right. A little ASMR of the rain. So we are going to be talking about a subsidiary of Amway that we've never talked about on the show in length. I think maybe it's come up just randomly. But that's Quickstar.
Yes.
I'm really excited to talk about Quickstar because, I mean, it's Amway. And I'm sure there are people that are like, oh, Quickstar's Amway? Like, that are just learning right now that Quickstar was a part of Amway. And you were in Quickstar when it got absorbed back into Amway. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about all of this really interesting experiences that you had in your life while Amway was a part of it and MLM in general. But let's go back to the beginning and talk about how you were raised and sort of set the tone for what happens to you later on.
So this is a really long story, but I'm going to try to condense it for you guys so that you don't get totally inundated. But I was raised in the Baptist church in Northern California near Lake Tahoe area in the woods, like in the middle of nowhere. It was very fire and brimstone. My grandfather was a Gideon. You know, the guys that hand out the Bibles. He's one of the original Gideons.
Wow.
Yeah. So my family is very fundamental in that way. I was raised to believe that rock and roll was demonic and every aspect of my life was controlled. I was a bad person. I was bad when I was a kid. Maybe not really, but that's what I was told. I remember when I was little praying and really hoping that things would be easier and change. And I'd get jealous of my friends having these easy lives, you know, but nothing ever changed.
Your prayers were not answered.
Yeah, no. And I grew up as the oldest. So I was, well, I guess I'm not really the oldest, but my dad divorced my mom when I was 3 and then he remarried. And this lady already had 3 kids and 2 of them were much older and one of them was younger than me. And then I have my sister.
Okay.
You know, I have a biological sister with the same mom. So my mom was living in Seattle And we were living in California and we do that swap every summer. So I saw my mom in the summer. Right around when I was 16, my stepmom and I got into all kinds of arguments and things like that. And I am writing a memoir right now that goes into a lot of detail about my childhood and whatnot. But essentially, she kicked me out, said that her and my dad had a conversation one day and they decided that they wanted me to leave, which was a lie. She didn't actually have this conversation with my dad. She just said that to me to plant the seed. I asked my dad about it. He was like, what? No.
What? So you are kicked out by your stepmother. Your dad is none the wiser.
Right.
What happens?
So I had this conversation with my dad about what to do. And he basically agreed and said, you know, maybe you should go live with your mom. So that summer I left and I basically abandoned all of my siblings to deal with my stepmom. Because I was the person that kind of was the, I don't know, front person. My sister says I was the scapegoat. So like all of the things that whenever she got mad, I would be the one that got the brunt of it. And then when I left, that fell on my sister. And so it created a whole bunch of issues later on. But yeah, I was free. So I moved in with my mom. I moved up to Seattle in the Ballard area. And I was going to start high school there in Ballard. There was a multi-million dollar school just built. And they let me tour the school before they opened it. It was terrifying. The school was so huge. I mean, I was used to like classes of 100 kids at my old school. And this was like, it was terrifying. So my mom was like, oh, you know, it's okay because me and your stepdad are going to, or me and my boyfriend are going to go buy property. And so they decided to buy property out in Kingston. I eventually moved to the Kitsap Peninsula.
Okay.
Which is west of Seattle. You take a ferry boat over and that's kind of important for later.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I like the isolation like that. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. I've been living pretty much between the Kitsap Peninsula and Seattle since 1999.
Okay.
There's a whole lot of other things that I won't go into with my family, but before I graduated high school, I started attending another church called Christ Memorial Church, which was a evangelical Pentecostal church, which was way different.
Well, that's, it's like out of one frying pan into another frying pan.
Yes, yes. And actually, I had met a boy at school. He wasn't my boyfriend or anything. I had a boyfriend. And I met this kid on the bus because he lived really close to me. And he kept asking me to go to church with him. And he's, are you a Christian? And I was like, well, yeah, I guess. But, you know, Jesus would not want me to be in church because I had lost my virginity. And, you know, I think if I walk in, I'm going to get shot down by lightning and all that. Because I was very used to like the fire and brimstone stuff, right? And I was,
right.
And, you know, we grew up in purity culture. So you know what I'm talking about here. But
yeah,
I had long lost my virginity, like when I was 16. So I was a rebellious child.
Hey, some of us are. It's okay. It happens. Yeah.
I mean, I was coerced into my first time. I didn't really know how to say no because my stepmom was so controlling. Like I just, anybody that had authority over me, I just did what they wanted because I didn't want to A, hurt their feelings or B, get into trouble. And that's just, that's kind of a theme that has followed me through my life. So anyways, I got into this church and it was totally different than the Baptists. You know, they pray with their hands over their head and there's loud music and there's some guy on a keyboard playing throughout the sermon. You know, it's very like up and down emotionally when you're there. And, you know, I felt like I belonged, but I don't know, like I was really trying to be a better person. And that's what I thought that I was getting myself into when I went to that church. And then I went on a missions trip to Romania and that changed everything for me. I quit going to that church after the missions trip.
Wow.
So.
We haven't even gotten to the MLM part yet.
I know. It's. This is why I'm writing it down because I really hope that teens read it because, you know, if they read it before, maybe they make some decisions or maybe they realize some things. and can relate to me when I was that kid.
Yeah.
So anyways, I went to Romania and I can tell you're curious. We were supposed to spend time with the orphans there. There was a lot of orphans in Romania for previous political reasons.
Mm-hmm.
The dire straits that these children were in is just absolutely heartbreaking. And so we were there for 2 weeks and I was told we were going to spend time with the orphans and that's what we were going to do. But what we did instead was we learned these dances that were like too contemporary Christian music, like a lot of pop kind of Christian music, where we'd mime out how Christ died on the cross.
Oh.
And yeah. Or somebody being saved by the Holy Spirit.
Interpretive Christian dancing.
Yes, it was very. And I'm not a dancer at all. And my favorite music growing up was Metallica and Megadeth and, you know, the evil music that I wasn't allowed to listen to.
So not Christian rock.
No. During this time, I really got into DC talk and like actual Christian pop music. So right. I kind of shifted who I was to be better belong, right?
Right.
So anyways, we learned all these dances and we get to Romania and we were in this really tiny town called Oradea, which is really close to the border of another country. I can't remember which one, Turkey or Budapest or it's over there. It's on the west side. And
Hungary.
Yes. Yes. Hungary. There we go. And so we found this field and my memory is kind of bad because this is 2000, 2001. So this is a while ago, but it was this big field near a Romani encampment. And I don't know if you know anything about the Romani people, but they are kind of migrant, the original mm-hmm. native people of the land. And somebody out there can correct me in my history of the Romani people, because I'm not a scholar in that area, but we basically set up like a stage in kind of the front area or the entrance area of this field. And we'd all line up. There was a group of, we were 25 of us. And then we had a bunch of interpreters. And then we'd do these dances. And then people from all over would flock to come watch us do these dances. And then our pastor would do a sermon, like a really short sermon, and then do an altar call there. And then we'd pray over people, get them to convert, which was insane because they did not need conversion because they're Christian, Eastern Orthodox there. So we were preaching to the choir.
Right.
Mostly.
You're like, you should change denominations. It's really fun over here.
Yeah. Like our Christianity is better than yours.
We believe mostly all the same stuff. We just have different cookies. Come over here.
Yeah. So I had some, as what I know now, cognitive dissonance where I would be praying and not understanding what I was praying for exactly. Anyways, I just had a really hard time dealing with it. And then we finally get to go see the orphans for one day for 2 hours.
Oh my God. And the rest of the time you're proselytizing in fields.
Yes. Or sightseeing.
To nomadic people that you're hoping come by and gather.
Yep.
Who already believe what you believe, but are just a different denomination of belief.
Exactly. An older, more secure denomination, one that is rooted in history versus evangelical. What I grew up with has some roots in history, but it's a more recent version. And yeah, so when I got back from this trip, I just couldn't go back to church. I just couldn't. I mean, I had so many issues. Like, why was I there? Why was I thinking that these people needed saving? How come we didn't do the work we were going to be doing? I felt like I had what I know now is white saviorism, which is something that was like ingrained in me from a very young child. And I just couldn't reconcile that anymore. Like it just didn't make sense to me. And I didn't have words for that at the time. I didn't know it was white saviorism or anything like that.
Right. Or even that was a thing, or the feelings that you were feeling were valid and that other people had been experiencing them as well.
Right. And I couldn't talk to anybody there, the other 25 people or my pastor, because what were they going to say to me? Like that I was wrong? Or I mean, I was worried that they were going to tell me I wasn't a Christian. It was bad. So then I leave the church and decided to take a couple years off from school. I graduated with honors and had worked my tail off, you know, just trying to be better than what I thought I was. And I started working at an orchid conservatory. And
wow.
And then I worked for this lady who had this amazing garden that was in Martha Stewart magazine, because I'm a huge plant nerd. You guys will know that my handle on Instagram is plantfreak6, because I just love plants so much. I have so many.
So let's get into where this MLM crosses your path.
Yeah. So after working in the gardens and things like that, I decided to get back into school and get a degree in forestry from the University of Washington.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And I had met a guy that summer before school. He was a ranger, an Army ranger, located in Fort Lewis. He was just getting out of the military. We decided to move to Seattle and get our own place in the university district instead of me moving into a dorm, because I was actually older than most of the students at that time. I had taken 2 years off. So we moved into this tiny little house. Well, the house was actually big, but in Seattle, these old houses in the university district are parsed out. So like a 4-bedroom house would be made into 3 different apartments. And so it was so tiny. Like you walk in and my washer and dryer and kitchen and living room were all in the same room. And then we had a teeny tiny bathroom and a bedroom in the back. And it was old and rickety. It was terrifying. And so he decided to start going to college for IT, and not at UW, but at a different school, and start working as a DJ, because that's kind of one of the things that he was interested in. And I'll tell you, we did not make very much money. I started working at a garden store in the U District and was working part-time and doing school full-time. And he was doing school full-time and then DJing at night. And it was we were stretched very thin. One of his coworkers at the DJing, I don't know what you call it, club,
yeah,
office, I don't know what it is, company. I don't know. They did bar mitzvahs, okay, and weddings and
yeah,
crap like that. He told, we'll call him Chris. He told Chris that he had this amazing opportunity that he needed to tell him about, how he could own his own Costco type of thing.
Ooh.
And, you know, he could do everything online, which was kind of the new thing back then. It wouldn't cost very much, and that we could retire by the time we were 30.
And how old are you at this point?
21.
I mean, that's the dream, right?
Yeah.
21 years old and you randomly stumble across this guy who's like also a part-time DJ and like is running his own Costco essentially and like has all these great, like he's going to retire. He's got a mentor, all these things.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the dream, meeting a guy like that at 21.
Yeah. He said almost exactly that he had a mentor that he wanted to introduce us to. And then the ball was in motion, right?
Absolutely. The moment you say hello back, the ball is in motion.
Yes. So this guy that Chris worked with shows up at our house one day with this guy in a suit. And I'm telling you, this guy was like appalled at our living situation, but he didn't tell his face that until it was too late. He was like...
And here he is in a suit.
Yes. And I'm like in sweatpants or something and not dressed for this occasion. Nobody told me that we were going to be meeting this amazing business guy, supposedly. So we all sat on the couch and we'll call him D. He sat down, the guy in the suit, and he basically said, what would you do if you could retire? Would you do anything to retire by the time you were 30? And what would that mean to you? He started asking us these questions, asking us like our plans, if we were planning on getting married, if we were planning on having children, how our financial situation was. This was like an hour-long conversation of him grilling us and then telling us these leading questions. What would it mean to you to retire early? What would it be like to not have a job? You know? And to me, I was like, I don't know. I really like plants, you know, like I really want to do something on my own and work for the government someday. And my boyfriend, he was all in immediately.
Hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this guy, D, he did all that love bombing. He was like, you know, having your own Costco is so much easier than the time you served in Iraq in Afghanistan.
Oh.
If you could do that, then you could do this. And people will follow you because you are a leader, because you were a sergeant in the army. You could do this and it'd be so much easier.
How gross to say that to a vet who saw wartime. Like,
yeah.
And be like, this is going to be way easier than fighting in war. Like, it's just, it's so inappropriate to say to somebody.
Not only that, but he was already manipulating our behavior. Was it Stephen Hassan with the bite model?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was going through that, you know, modifying our behavior. Like, he would lean in and then my boyfriend would lean in. You know what I mean? Like, he was doing these things that was very, like, his body language, and he was very good at it. He was a platinum in Amway, and so have had years of practice getting people in.
Right.
Long story short, we went to a board plan, which, as you guys know, is where they show how the business works, and they outlined it as making your own Costco business. Instead of buying things at the store or buying things at Costco, you buy a membership to Quickstar, and you get discounts on everything and anything. And why would you spend your money at a grocery store when you can be buying it from yourself and making money off of it? And they're like, and it's better than Costco because, you know, if you refer somebody to Costco, they don't pay you, but we do.
Right. That good old referral fee.
Yeah.
That you can get every month if you keep it up.
Yep.
At this point, has the business only been introduced as Quickstar? Has it been introduced as Amway? Has it been introduced as just a great opportunity? Like, what do you guys know about this business at this board meeting?
Yeah. So at the board meeting, pretty much the first half an hour to 45 minutes is showing how the business works, right? And they don't tell you anything about what it is until that last 15 minutes. And then they said it was Quickstar. And I was like, Quickstar, what's that? Never heard of that before.
Okay. So at the end of the meeting, they say that it's Quickstar.
Yep.
And what does your boyfriend end up doing?
He is so excited. You know, we're at the end of the meeting and then everybody comes up to you because you're the newbies, right? And they're like, oh, we're so glad you're here. We're so glad you're here. Wasn't that cool? Wasn't the board plan amazing? Don't you guys want to learn more about it? You know, let me connect you to D again and we'll get you signed up. There wasn't a whole lot of questions asked. It was more
just swarming.
Yeah, exactly. Not asking us if we had any questions. Nobody really paid attention to me at that point. I was kind of like the fly on the wall. All of it was focused on Chris at the time. Like, he was the new it thing, right? A couple days later, we signed up and went through the whole buying the membership to Quickstar. And there was like an online kind of a front that had like the Quickstar labels and branding and all of that. There was no Amway branding whatsoever. And then we had to buy a membership to GoDaddy.com so we can open a .biz business. Because at the time, they didn't have the capability of making your own storefront through the Quickstar website. So you had to buy a separate website and then you would link it somehow. It was all very complicated. So that was $20 a month. The Quickstar membership was $79. Then we had to sign up for Worldwide Dream Builders.
Okay. So you're in Worldwide Dream Builders.
Yeah. I didn't even know what a line of affiliation was or anything like that. That none of that was explained. They just said, you know, Worldwide Dream Builders provides your tools. Without the tools, you're not going to be able to succeed. We're like, okay, so we'll sign up. You know, like, we didn't ask a whole lot of questions because we were 21, 22 years old.
Right.
We didn't know any better. I had no practice in confronting authority figures or anything like that. So we just moved forward with it. We had to purchase Communicate, which was a $40 monthly fee for this messaging system, which I never got access to, by the way. Because I was
the secondary on the...
Yeah. Well, we weren't married, so...
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So they had me sign up at underneath of Chris.
Okay.
So that we could fulfill our BV, our business volume requirements, because we had to have 50 BV to qualify every month.
So you were both signed up.
Yes.
You were technically his downline.
Yes.
Okay.
Then we started to put together our monthly ditto order. And of course, you've heard this story before. They go through your cabinets and everything and put X's on stuff and find replacements. And the things that we would get every month, like toilet paper and toothpaste and stuff like that, were put on a ditto order. And we had to do 150 PV for that. So that was about $300 to $450 a month.
Probably more than you were spending on toilet paper and cereal before Amway, right?
Oh, yeah. And it got so bad that we couldn't afford grocery store stuff. I would try to make meals, beans and rice and things like that to keep us going. Otherwise, we were just eating bars and excess.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was bad.
Wow. So yeah, so you're setting up your monthly ditto. You have two dittos because you're two separate accounts.
Right.
So double the cost of everything.
So we log in and we're going to order some laundry detergent. And I find out it's the same laundry detergent that my parents used to buy when they were in Amway. And I was like, oh my gosh, these are Amway products. Is this Amway?
Wait. Time out. Yeah. Time out, Lacey. You have left out information. Your parents were in Amway?
Yes. Yes, they were in it for 2 years.
Wow. So it wasn't necessarily that the products said Amway. You were like, I recognize this brand of soap. This is Amway soap.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we were sitting there with our upline, the DJ guy. And I was like, these are Amway products. He's like, yeah, that's because Amway changed to Quickstar just a few years ago because, you know, Amway was getting a bad rap and they just wanted to rebrand it.
Well, at least he was honest about it. He was like, people know it's a scam, so we had to change our name real quick.
Yeah, I was like, why didn't you guys say that in the beginning? They're like, oh, well, because this is so much better. You know, the younger folks are going to be easier to recruit and things like that if people don't know it's Amway. So just don't tell people it's Amway.
They're saying all the quiet parts out
loud. Yeah.
They're saying all the quiet parts out loud. He's like, well, yeah, because it's a scam. So we had to change the name because then people won't, you know, we can't recruit them.
Right.
If they know it's a scam.
Right.
And we need to because you can't be the last one in. You won't make any money.
And isn't Quickstar such a cool name? Quixtar.
Yeah.
It's like that trendy thing in the early 2000s where they're changing random letters to make it sound cooler.
Totally. Well, and Quickstar started in like 2001 is what we looked it up and we figured that it came around on the scene at that time, which is right at the time of the dot-com bubble where everybody was going online because it's right Y2K, right?
Yep.
So everybody's moving online. Everybody's utilizing all of the new technology and all of the new tools that you have literally at your fingertips. Other MLMs were online. Amway notoriously had not sort of gone into the online space. And then here they are when they do go into the online space. They're not Amway, you know, right. They are Quickstar. We're different. It's the, you know, I'm not regular Amway. I'm a cool Amway.
Yeah. It's Amway with their pants on backwards.
Like, it's just, it's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's wild that you, it's just that you recognized the product. It's not like you were like signed in. They're like, welcome to Quickstar, a subsidiary of Amway. It's like, you were like, I've used this before.
Oh yeah.
Why didn't you tell us? And then he's literally like, well, you know, there's a lot of bad press out there. So,
yeah,
I mean, and at this point you've already signed on the dotted line. It's too late.
Yep. And my parents did Amway in 1996 and 1997. So I was young enough to not understand what Amway was, but old enough to remember the products. Yeah.
Right. Wow.
So, and I remember they were gone all the time. We had babysitters a lot during that time.
Oh my gosh. So you figure out that the soap is Amway, and then what happens?
So we place our orders, right? Then we start going to meetings and we start ordering the tools and listening to the Brad and Julie Duncan CDs and where they talk about the dream, like this amazing dream that every person in Amway needs to focus on. You know, make a vision board. The sky's the limit. What are all the things that you want to have and what you want to do with your life? And it was a weird way for me to think because growing up the way I did, I didn't think that any of those things could ever be possibly in my grasp. And then having these people telling you that you could have whatever you wanted and you could do these things, it was like a new window had been opened in my mind, and that wind just rushed in and it was exhilarating. Then I started getting sucked into it myself. Like at first I wasn't, and then going to the meetings and listening to the CDs really turned me into an Amway monster.
An Ambot, right?
An Ambot, yes.
Well, it's true. You know, we have an episode about the tools. Lots of people find this podcast because of that.
Yes, I know. That was mind-blowing.
And it's a thing. It's a machine. You hear in the episode about the Amway tools how Amway realizes that it's this symbiotic relationship, and you can't have the tools without Amway, and you can't have Amway without the tools. It's just so integrated. It's part of it.
Yeah. And it's shocking to me that not more MLMs have them.
Well, here's the thing, is I think what every time I hear about a coaching, like a coach coaching coaches to coach coaches, I go, this is Amway tool scam.
Yes.
This is you joining a guru who would be the head of an LOA is the Amway guru, but this is just an MLM guru, right? It applies to any MLM. You can be in any MLM and use this tool scam. And the tools is join my coaching program and pay X amount a month to have access to my YouTube channel and all of the videos I've ever done and all of the things I've ever done. And there's all these modules you can go through. That's what the new tools scam is. It's coaches coaching coaches and master resell rights and getting people into all of these tools scams that are not MLM specific, the way that Amway is MLM specific. It's a whole new beast that's grown from there.
I didn't even think of it that way.
Oh, what? See, these are the things when I'm talking to people that I'm like, this sounds eerily familiar. And I'm able to make these connections. And yes, for me, the new tool scam is MLM coaching. At least the MLM tool scam is MLM coaching, but there's a coach to coach a coach for every coaching thing you'd want to be coached on.
Yeah, it's mind blowing.
Wow. So you're plugging along, you're buying the tools, you're reading the books, you're turning your car into a mobile university. You're doing all of the things you need to do.
Yep.
How successful are you in your business?
So we recruit probably over the lifetime of our Amway business when we were together, about 10 people. The highest rank we got was 1,000 PV, which was the first pin at the time. I don't know if it's changed or not yet.
Okay.
So 1,000 PV running through our business. And once we hit that, we were expected to maintain it. And that's when we got hounding phone calls at the end of the month saying, you know, how are you going to get to your 1,000 PV? You need to be calling your downline. You need to be reminding them. And we got to be on stage, not at the big convention, but we got to go on stage for one of the little mini conventions, like the local ones, and be recognized. And of course, I got on stage with my husband at the time because we had gotten married. Again, fish out of water. Kind of like nobody was paying attention to me. I was just an accessory to him because it's very patriarchal there in that system.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. You said you joined when you guys were dating. You were living together. He was your boyfriend. But I know about Amway because I've talked to people, and you guys, we've all heard the stories. Amway is so obsessed with people's relationships, with getting them engaged and getting them married off and getting them in these Amway businesses and getting them to be all in with every aspect of their life. So how long into your Amway business did they start hounding you? Because obviously you got married. You just said husband. So how long into your business before they were like, you guys should get engaged and get married?
They never talked to me about it.
Oh.
And I know. In 2006, because I was living in Seattle, I would frequently go home to visit my mom in the Kitsap Peninsula. And one of the weekends I was away, I had come home to return to my room and my pillow smelled like cigarette smoke and perfume. And at that time I was not smoking and I didn't wear perfume. And I confronted my boyfriend and said, hey, what is going on here? You know, who did you have over and why is my pillow smell like some chick? And he was like, oh no, I just had a DJ friend come over. She needed a place to stay. And I was like, well, why didn't she sleep on the couch? Why was she in my bed? And he's like, oh, I slept on the couch. And I was like, I don't believe you. And we got into a big argument and I ended up kicking him out. And then I find out that he goes to our upline and stays the night and has our platinum D talked to him, and he said that Dee was concerned that Chris and I were going to split up and that that would ruin our business. And so he told Chris that we had to get married. You know, you can't be fooling around. You need to grow up and just get married and, you know, basically put it back in your pants and commit. Or your business is going to be ruined.
Right. But like, that's not how that works. It's wild, right? So you're in a relationship. You're in Amway together. You're his downline. You come home. You smell cigarette smoke. You're like, hey, what's going on? He makes something up. Whether or not it's true or not, it doesn't matter. It instigates a fight, rightfully so. And he goes to get advice from his upline. And his upline, instead of being like, this is obviously toxic, you guys should probably split up and like, we'll figure it out. It's literally just an Amway business. Don't ruin your life. He was like, you guys should get married.
Yeah.
You guys should really commit, because you won't fool around once you're committed.
Right.
Once you really commit, life will be better and your Amway business will be stronger. So you should get married instead.
Yeah.
How long from that conversation until the wedding?
Like 9 months.
Okay. So, I mean, that's pretty quick.
Yeah.
It's not too long.
No. I mean, I had to figure out what I was doing with school and all of that. And then we got married. And shortly after that,
you let out this big sigh and you roll your eyes after you say, and then we got married. It wasn't great?
No.
Your problems weren't fixed?
No. I had a lot of doubts because shortly before we actually tied the knot, he had been avoiding me quite a bit. And I wasn't even sure he was going to show up for our wedding day. And at one point, he had actually killed one of my cats.
Yeah. Oh my God. All of these are very big red flags.
Yeah.
But again, the way you're raised in this evangelical space, in this patriarchal space, in this patriarchal evangelical MLM that all of your eggs are in, what do you do?
Yeah. And I had that sunk cost fallacy too, right? Like I'd already gone so far with him. I had worked so hard on our business together. What would I do? Where would I go? Like, I couldn't live on my own in Seattle. That's impossible. So I was really tied to the fact that I had to get married to him. And so once we got married, the tension from our upline increased like tenfold because now we were the perfect dinks. If nobody's heard of that, it's double income, no kids.
Right.
And now we're married. So it's official that we're the perfect dinks.
So what happens to your Amway business when you're the downline and you marry your upline? Are they merged together into one business?
Well, so by then we had already recruited so many people that I didn't need to have that BV volume anymore. So we had increased our personal volume. My sister or somebody signed up as a customer at some point.
Okay. But you didn't have any people like under your account because they were all under his account because the assumption was that you would merge your businesses eventually anyway.
Right.
Okay. So you now you're married and you're running an Amway business as a couple. And like you said, you're dinks, double income, no kids. I think this is really important. And this is one of the reasons I really wanted to talk to you about this. Dinks are on the rise because a lot of people are choosing to be child free. A lot of people are breaking out of other belief systems like, you know, oh, I was raised to become a mother. I was raised to provide as a father and different things like that. And people are like, yeah, I don't think I want any kids. And so a lot of people are just, and again, it's very expensive to live. It's very expensive to live on a single income. It's very expensive to live on a double income. It definitely helps. But the more children you have, that just goes up exponentially. So to have no children and to have a double income means a lot of, quote, disposable income, depending on where you live. And I hear a lot from people, mostly Amway. Let's be honest here.
Yeah.
It's mostly Amway. But of young couples either being encouraged to get married, encouraged to go all in and have these businesses, these dink businesses. So if you're a dink, be careful because people, they're going after these specific types of relationships in MLM as well.
Yep. Yep. And we were told many times to focus on finding other dinks. So now that we were a married couple, we could find other couples that were around our same age group in the same position. We were able to relate to them better. and kind of dangle that carrot and say, hey, look what we're doing. Look what we have. And we're doing it as a couple. Isn't it amazing? You know?
So I want to ask you, as a dink, where is the best place to find another dink?
At school.
School. Okay.
You know, at work. Yeah. Like pretty much any place that you go is an opportunity. You know, you wouldn't go anywhere without having your eyes open or your ears open to hear somebody say something and get an in on a conversation with them to kind of lead them to an Amway conversation. Okay. Without telling them it's Amway, of course.
Right.
It's very complicated. If I met somebody at a coffee shop and I noticed that they were reading some sort of self-help book, or if it was like a husband and wife team, I'd be like, I really like your bag. Or, you know, just start with small talk, the weather or whatever. And then you just start a conversation. And then once you see an opening, like maybe they have some sort of negative attitude towards their job. Or if they say, oh, yeah, I'm looking to buy a new car, or, you know, just any kind of opening that can lead them down that dream path is where we would go. And sometimes we would actually make friends knowing that they were dinks and spending time with them before we'd ever have a conversation about the business. So we'd spend like weeks kind of grooming them into having a conversation about the business at some point in time.
And this reminds me of Isaac's episode last year when he met another dink couple at a dog park and thought, oh my God, we met really good friends. This is so exciting. And it turned out to be Amway. Same exact thing.
Yep. And they've gotten a lot better about it now. This whole process of kind of grooming them into an Amway conversation is now called The Process. And that actually was implemented by Worldwide Dream Builders based on this theory. And it had been tried and true, tested, you know, with my generation. They just never put words to it. So now they have a whole specific process that lays this out step by step. And it's terrifying.
Wow.
Absolutely terrifying. It's clear manipulation.
Yeah. So you're in Amway, you're married, you're chugging along, you're buying your ditto, you're recruiting people, you're going on dink dates, looking for other people to get onto your team. What are some of the rules that allow, like, because this is a very rigid schedule.
Yeah.
You have very specific things you have to do when you're in Amway. A lot of people talk about how, you know, in MLMs, there's not a lot of time freedom, even though that's what you're told you're going to get. So what are some of the things that you had to give up and some of the rules that you had to follow to be this successful Amway dink?
Well, first we had to give up everything.
Okay.
Every aspect of our lives
that checks.
Was turned into Amway. So I have a list here. So we have the cardinal rules first, which I know you guys have talked about before. No cross-lining, never talking negative, always bring big life decisions or purchases to upline for advice first, which includes everything from decisions with your partners, cars, houses, living situations, investments, jobs, and planning events like weddings. The next one was to do not embarrass or defy your upline, not mess with anyone else's money, egos, or spouses. And I have a great example of bringing big advice up to upline first. So I was at work one day and I got a call from Chris saying, hey, you know, I'm going to buy us a car. And I was like, okay. And D has already approved that we do it. And I was like, well, why do we need a car? Like, I have my truck, because I had this little truck that I had bought with my own money before we met. And then he had a car. And he's like, oh, yeah, well, I'm going to need your truck to use as a trade-in for it.
Oh.
And D had approved this purchase, saying that we needed a better vehicle that was more reliable to get to meetings. And we needed to show that we were actually making money because our cars were old and decrepit. And they were not like, it was part of the Amway costume, right?
Right.
Looking like you can afford things when in reality you can't.
Right.
And so we went from two cars to having this car. And now I no longer have a vehicle of my own. So I became completely dependent on Chris.
Ugh.
I couldn't go anywhere without his approval or anything. It was all taken from me.
That's wild. Not only did your upline have a decision in the fact that you guys moved your relationship from just dating into being legally married, But now they're also the one going, oh yeah, just trade in your cars and get a much better, nicer, fancier looking car. You don't need two dinky cars
right.
for a dink when you can have a really great car. And now you're like, well, what do I drive now?
Yeah.
If the car is not here, what about me?
Yeah. And then shortly after that, we were told we should move closer to our upline so that we wouldn't have to drive so far. And by then, Chris had gotten a job at a company in Kirkland, which is east of Seattle. And you know where Costco is from.
Right. The real Costco.
Yes, the real Costco. Right around that time, we had gone to a conference, and on the way back, Dee and Chris and I were having a conversation over a meal, kind of doing our post-conference download, you know, What kind of things are we going to change? What kinds of goals do we have? Like, how are we going to recruit more people? We were all kind of fired up after a conference. And that's one of the things that's exactly the term they would say, you know, you're fired up.
Oh, yeah.
And so they had this conversation in front of me, and Dee said to Chris, I don't understand why Lacey is still going to school. Doesn't that seem ridiculous? Because you guys are going to be so successful in your business. Why would she need to get her college degree? And I was standing right there and I was like, well, I guess I don't need it. I'm going to prove to you I'm all in. Start paying attention to me, please. I was desperate for his approval. And I was desperate for my husband's approval too, because he had been ignoring me so much. When we would go to meetings, that's when he would pay attention to me. But at home, in our own little cozy nest at home, it was like I didn't exist. And so I was really trying to get their approval. So I decided, yeah, I'll quit school. And I only had a year left at the UW. And I made all kinds of excuses to my family and friends as to why I was quitting. Like, I blamed the school. I blamed the professors that they weren't helping me. Like, I had a laundry list of reasons why I didn't belong at the school anymore. And the truth was that my grades were plummeting because I was out late almost every single night building our Amway business. And I was exhausted and I had no freedom. Like, it was literally just school and Amway. And I had started gaining weight because the food we were eating was crap. Like, all we drank was excess and all we ate were the nasty protein bars that they had. And it just kind of spiraled. I was in between a rock and a hard place, and I didn't know what else to do except to give in to something. And the easy thing was quitting school.
Wow. Did it make things better?
No, it got worse, because then once I quit school, I had quote unquote more free time. Dee said that, well, maybe what Lacey needs is another job. And that way you can be more free to meet more people. Like, if she has two jobs, she'll be exposed to more people.
Well, more people than a college campus?
Yes.
like that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, well, because I had quit school. So that avenue is no longer available.
But that's so silly, though. He's like, quit school and then get another job. So, but his reasoning of getting another job so that you could reach more people is in direct contrast to you quitting school because you're on a campus full of people. It's all very manipulative to get you stuck and in Amway only.
Right.
With no other outside anything.
My husband, Chris, got me a job working with him at the same company as a salesperson. And I was, this is so funny. We ended up moving really close to this job so that now all I had to do was walk to work. So then literally I'm walking to work in the morning, working with him. He was working the IT department and I was working in sales. I show up to work. Nobody knows that he's even married. I would say, hey, you know, Chris is my husband. And they'd be like, really?
Wow.
I'd be like, yeah, we've been married for, you know, 6 months. And they're like, oh, he never said he was. Like, there was like this shock on their faces, especially the women. He never talked about me, apparently. Then we'd do Amway at night. So he knew where I was at all times. And I didn't know where he was at all times because he ends up buying a motorcycle. And our upline D gets really mad at him and he says, you know, you can't have a motorcycle because you're not free yet. You know, motorcycles are for free people only. But he doesn't get reprimanded. So he breaks this rule here, right? Like, not including his upline in his decision making. So he kind of gets pushed into more of these mentorship calls. He has to check in with Dee more often. We're kind of babysat at meetings, like where we have to sit next to our upline and, you know, because they're monitoring what we're telling our downline. Everything in Amway is duplicate. Everything that they want you to do is duplicate. So if your downline sees you buying a motorcycle, then they might think that's okay. But it's not. It's not okay. So some of the other rules. So we're not allowed to drink. Not allowed to watch TV. Obviously be a product of the product. Music should be limited. If you have time for that, then you have time to listen to a CD. Men should run the finances and women are the supporters. So I didn't have any control over our finances whatsoever. All of our money went into an account that I didn't have access to. I had no idea how much money we were spending on our products or anything. If I wanted to buy a new outfit for my Amway costume, I couldn't do that without his approval. And a lot of times my choices were ridiculed. Like, why would you buy that? You should buy this instead. At one point, I had cut my hair to look more like the other women at the conferences, and I actually put bleach in it and did all that. For people who can't see me, my hair is kind of reddish, and, you know, like, redheads are not very common. And I was really struggling to fit in, like, in any way I possibly could, and turning myself into, what did you call it, Amway bot?
An ambot, yeah.
Yes, an ambot, yes.
Yeah.
And all of it was just trying to seek approval constantly. You know, now that my husband had this motorcycle, he would leave me during the day, like on the weekends, right? Like we were supposed to be together building our business and he would just leave. And one day, I think we both had a day off. Maybe it was a holiday or something, but we also had a business meeting to go to later that evening. And I was so desperate for his attention that I decided when he left and told me I couldn't go with him, that I was going to get into his rum in the freezer.
Oh, no.
And by the way, this is like 10 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, okay.
I start making myself some rum and cokes and I turn on Project Runway and I get my knitting project out and I have myself some drinks and knit and watch my favorite fashion competition show.
What a naughty girl you are.
And get trashed.
How many cardinal yes. rules did you break?
I broke 5 of them all at once.
Good for you.
Yeah. Yeah, so by the time he came home, it was like 4, 5 o'clock. I was totally trashed. I mean, I probably couldn't speak clearly. I mean, I don't even know if my knitting was going very well. Probably the sight to see. So he walks in the door and I'm like, hi, honey, how's it going? You want to just hang out with me and will it blow off this meeting and whatnot? He's like, no, we have to go. And then he's like, are you drunk? And I was like, yeah. And he was so mad. He was so mad. He went and threw on his suit and he's telling me how I was letting him down and how I was letting all of our downline down and that he couldn't understand why I would do that. Don't I want to be building the business with him? And this laundry list of accusations instead of saying, you know, I'm sorry, I've been ignoring you and things like that. But, you know, so he left me and went to the meeting on his own. And he told our upline or he told everybody in our group that I was sick and I couldn't come in because I was sick. But then he told our upline, D and his wife, that I had gotten drunk. And then I got a phone call the next day telling me that I was unacceptable and that I had setting a bad example for our downline and that missing meetings was not an option. By the way, we had not missed a meeting in like almost 2.5 years by this time.
I have no words. I mean, I have all the words, but at the same time, I have no words. It is so ridiculous that you haven't missed a meeting in 2.5 years. And also the fact, why does your husband have to be such a punk and be like, she's drunk? Like, why can't he just be like, she's sick? Why can't he just be like a loving dude and like be cool? I don't like Chris. I don't think he's cool.
Yeah, because you don't lie to your upline. No, you don't lie to them.
Well, but you can lie to your wife?
Yeah.
Ugh. Okay. Well, so you're a giant rebel in Amway. You're the worst. You're drunk. You're watching reality TV and crafting. How dare you? That's the worst you could possibly ever do.
Yeah.
How perfect is your husband, though? Because, you know, if you're such a bad person, he's got to be perfect, right?
Oh, yeah. He was.
He's not getting up to anything bad, is he?
Well, come to find out that he actually started an affair with our downline. So we had recruited a couple, this guy and his fiance, and his name was also Chris, which gets confusing, but
we'll call him Chris number two.
Yeah. They were engaged, and actually we had been really good friends with them. I thought I was going to be in their wedding as a bridesmaid and wow, everything. Like, I went with this girl shopping for wedding dress. I met her family. I spent time with them. They were really good. They were like our perfect downline. But my husband started an affair with her, and I confronted her and told her to, you know, get away from my husband or whatever. And she's like, well, if you would have treated him better, this wouldn't have happened. And I was like,
what did you do? Was it all the knitting?
I don't know. Like, I still don't know. I mean, he ridiculed me for gaining weight at one point.
It's a bullshit excuse.
I had gained 5 pounds. And I think that's like from all the Amway stuff.
No, it's just a bullshit excuse.
I know. That's but all. I had believed it. And so I had been exercising and all this stuff. And I didn't actually find out that they had an affair until I had quit my job working with Chris, because I was getting the weirdest vibes from the women at work. So when I had this opportunity to get another job, I did. And it put me in Seattle again. So I was commuting from Kirkland to Seattle. And Chris was fine with me taking the car because he had his motorcycle then. But I was gone all the time. And so he had free reign of having an affair by then. And I came home and like he told me that he was going to go to church with her and that the church was going to like have counseling with him. And I'm like, but what about me? Like, why don't we get counseling?
Right.
And you like dump her and we'll move on with our lives. And he's like, it's too late, you know? And so I grabbed all my stuff and I went to my mom's. It was absolutely humiliating to pack up all my stuff in my dad's truck and take my cats with me. And
it's devastating.
But I was still in Amway, right?
Right. So that's my next question is, you're in a married Amway business. And your husband decides to have a relationship with your downline and they're going to be together and you're out. So what happens to your Amway business in the event of divorce?
So I got to keep the business. It was transferred under my name, which was easy because we were still married technically. And what they did was him and her got transferred to another platinum in Brad and Julie Duncan's downline. So he was cross line a few legs away instead of getting kicked out of Amway, which is what they had said would happen before.
Wow. I mean, was your husband a big enough earner that keeping him was more important than just letting a couple bad eggs go?
I don't know. I mean, how much is 1,000 PV to platinum? I don't know. To this day, I have no idea how much money they were making off of us because we weren't making that. Our bonus checks were something like between $50 and $200 a month. And then all of that we'd put back into tools, you know, to hand to downline or to prospects or something like that.
Wow.
So I don't know. I wish I knew that answer.
Yeah, right? So you're divorced, you're single, you're building your business in Amway, you're chugging along, and what happens next?
So I have to commute a whole lot now to build my Amway business from Kitsap, you know, take a ferry over to Seattle, pick up my Ditto orders and everything, which was just exhausting. And my upline platinums, D and his wife decided to just kind of ignore me. And I wasn't getting their attention. They didn't want to come over here and do board plans. They kind of decided maybe I wasn't worth their time. When I went back, so shortly after we divorced, there was a conference like in January or something. And I had to sit by D and his wife the entire time. I wasn't allowed to talk to my downline. I wasn't allowed to talk to any crossline or tell anybody what happened. Like nobody knew what happened to me or where my ex went. None of them knew. And then after that, I was just kind of ignored. without him, I wasn't anything. I wasn't a dink anymore. I wasn't the ideal person. And not only that, but I was living out in the middle of nowhere. So why would they come and pay attention to me? My brother-in-law got me going to another church in the Kitsap Peninsula area. I met a guy who's also named Chris, which is just awful.
Yeah. So you meet Chris at church.
Yeah. And he seemed fine. He seemed like a guy that, you know, loved God and wanted to have a great marriage and do the things, you know, that we all want. And I write about how he coerced me into a relationship in my book. But essentially, I wasn't ready for a relationship. I had just gotten divorced literally a month prior. My divorce was finalized in November. And by the end of December, I was already in a relationship with this guy. It was that fast.
Sometimes it happens fast.
Yeah. And so what I did was I had thought, oh, well, he might be a perfect person to sponsor.
Oh, no.
Yeah, because I wasn't going to date him if he didn't understand how Amway worked. And so I got him to a board plan. He saw it. He was like totally gung-ho. He was all in from the very beginning. He's a very strong personality and he's kind of charismatic. I wouldn't say he's charming necessarily, but like people listen to him when he talks. He's kind of a big charismatic dude. He speaks with such certainty. Like he could say the sky is purple today and like people would believe it just based on how he's so confident in what he's saying. He was perfect for Amway.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, perfect Ambot.
Yes, yes. So we started a relationship, got into it, got married that following summer. So we were together for 5 months before we tied the knot. Dee and his wife were super excited about him. They started pouring all kinds of attention into us. Like, it was like a revamp.
Yeah.
Of like my whole thing. Everybody was excited. We recruited a couple more people. But because Chris number two, or number three, I guess at this point.
Yeah, Chris number three now.
Yeah. Was new. He said all the wrong things. Like he would tell people with Amway like at the very beginning. He didn't understand the manipulation process that had to take place before pitching the business to them. So he really kind of was like a bull in a china closet with our Amway business at the very beginning. I kept telling him, like, you know, you can't tell people it's Amway and you can't just bully people into the business. There's some finessing you got to do, right? You got to make a friend.
There's a process.
Yes, there is a process.
Follow the process, Chris number three.
Yeah. So eventually we get married and Dee and his wife decide, hey, we can't go over to your guys' side of the water anymore to do board plants because it's just too much of a headache and it's expensive, blah, blah, blah. And so they have us move from Kitsap back over to Seattle. They secured a job for him working with some of our upline in another business, like a real business, not an Amway business. And then they got me a job working at a health clinic in the Northgate area, working with my direct upline's wife. So then it goes from Amway on my time to Amway all the time, because now we're both being monitored by our uplines at work during the day.
Yeah, all the time.
It was insane. Like for those couple years, because that was in 2008. Those couple years were some of the hardest to date. Like just, it was always Amway, everything. Like from sunup to sundown, all day long, just everything was Amway. I didn't handle it very well, I'll say. I definitely had some problems at my job. I couldn't talk to anyone or make any genuine relationships because it was either I was going to try to recruit them or I couldn't talk to them because I had no time. And being genuine with someone after getting out of Amway was very difficult because for so long I had turned that off. I was just focused on getting people in my business and not making real relationships. And that was really tough. And I know you just did an episode on mental health. And, you know, a lot of those things that were said resonated with me as far as being able to kind of get away from that mindset. It just took so, so long. And then especially for it being like all day, all the time. I don't know any other MLM where it goes to this extreme. Do you?
No. No. I mean, out of all the MLMs and all the stories I've ever heard, I always come back to Amway.
Yeah.
Saying, you know, I mean, into the episodes, you know, we ask. And every answer is right. Every single answer to what's the worst MLM is right. There's no right answer. They're all the worst. I agree. Some people have said all of them. I'm like, yes, perfect answer.
Yeah.
But for me, it always goes back to Amway. And they all are the worst, right? But like Amway has his fingers in every pie.
Yeah.
Little Jack Horner sticking his finger in a pie and pulling out plums on all 10. And it's just like they have their fingers in everything. And it's really gross.
Yeah.
And I you know, I've heard horror stories from other MLMs too, but it always comes back to this really intense coercive control with Amway where people are like, yeah, I'm in a cult. Like they know when they get out, they see it. And it's just, it's so consistent with Amway.
Yeah.
So from our research where we looked up Quickstar on the internet very quickly, this is the research, right? Quickstar sort of started not having the greatest experience as a company. And in 2009, it sort of disappeared and sort of was just absorbed back into Amway and became Amway Global, and Quickstar was no more. This is the same time that you're in this marriage. You get married in 2008. Amway decides, you know what? Quickstar is Amway. Sorry, guys. There was a fun 8 years of joking around about us being a totally different company, but cat's out of the bag. I pulled the curtain aside.
Yeah.
It's just me behind this big machine. You figured it out. And they get absorbed back in. What was that like? Was there announcements? Were there questions? Was anything addressed?
Yeah, there were announcements. They announced it at one of the conferences. I can't remember. Just basically saying how, you know, why would they use Quickstar when nobody knows what Quickstar is? Everybody knows what Amway is. And regardless of the past, people are familiar and are connected to those products. And they had a hard time dealing with the questions of like, why didn't you say it was Amway?
It's just easier to be like, we were just kidding.
Yeah.
We were trying a social experiment. We were joking around. Yeah. We were trying to see if we could, you know, create a totally different MLM out of the same thing and run each other's businesses parallel to each other and see which one did better. And guess what? We're going to stick with the original. Everybody knows it. Not everybody likes it, but everybody knows it. So we're back to Amway now. And now we're called Amway Global.
Yeah. And I think that the reason why they changed it to Amway Global, and I'm sure there could be more research done on this, but I think during that time, they were really trying to push into other countries. And I know that there was China was really big, and it was known as Amway in those other countries. So there was like this weird disconnect. If we're Amway in other countries, then why aren't we Amway in the US? And so they just kind of decided to fix that by saying, hey, you know, it is actually Amway.
Well, China entered the World Trade Organization in 2001, which was also the same year that Quickstar started. So that's interesting. Maybe the reason they were Quickstar originally was because what you're saying, to get in under a different name. And when they realized it didn't work, they were like, we're just going to try it now as Amway.
Yeah. I know that there was something funky going on with other countries.
We're going to look into that this season. If you guys have insight into that, let me know. But we're definitely going to look into the what the fuck is up with Quickstar topic this year.
Yes.
So they sort of write it off as it was a thing. Don't ask any more questions.
Right. Well, and it was a relief too to us as business builders because we were tired of trying to explain away the Amway thing. So by then it was just easier to not have to have that as a topic.
Yeah. What happens with you and husband number two?
So I ended up getting pregnant in 2009 and that changed a lot of things for me. I was no longer able to wear a full Amway costume anymore at meetings. And because I had to wear flats, I couldn't wear heels anymore. I was really uncomfortable in dresses, which is something that they required for the most part in Amway is like wearing knee-length dresses or skirts. And maternity wear for business clothes is very expensive. And I just couldn't, do that. I couldn't have one costume for Amway, another costume for work, and then also another costume at home, myself costume, I guess. I don't know. I had the hardest time feeling comfortable in whatever it was I was wearing. So I would just show up at Amway meetings, by the way, bored out of my freaking mind by now, because I know all of the board plans. It didn't matter who presented it. I would just know their board plan from beginning to end. So I just stopped trying to work so hard. I'm like, I'm pregnant. I can do whatever I want. Rebellious me. So my upline, Platinum, Dee's wife, told me, you know, again, I'm setting a bad example for my downline and I really should be putting more effort into my appearance. And, you know,
that's bullshit, by the way.
Yeah. What I was doing was going to duplicate downline negatively. And so then I just decided as I got bigger that I was just not going to go to meetings anymore. I stopped going because I was exhausted. I mean, I'm 5'2" and just squeezing a baby into me was like torture. And the job I had, I was on my feet all day long. There was no sitting in my job.
It just seems so strange for like Amway to be so like pro the American way, the American dream, get married, get engaged, have a family, be all in. And for the time that you're pregnant, they're like, oh, you're such an inconvenience. You're not wearing the Amway dress. You're not wearing the high heels. Like you're embarrassing.
Yeah.
And you're like, you're pregnant with a child to result in a family. That's just what they want. It doesn't make any sense. Because it's not actually about that. It's just about like putting a thumb on a woman and being like, stay right there.
Yeah. Well, and they knew eventually I was going to have the baby and I wasn't going to be there all the time. And that I was no longer a perfect dink because we were going to have kids. And so it was kind of a way for them to just push me out, but blaming me. And so I was like, okay, well, I can't go to meetings. So then my husband went to meetings without me and he tried to build the business on his own. And that was really not going well. He either got fired or he quit that job with our cross line. And anyways, it just kind of spiraled from there. I had the baby and then I came home one day, the first time I came home from an outing with some friends. It was the first night I had gone out on my own since having a baby. So she was like 9 months old and he was high as a kite and he had been watching her 9 months old and he had decided this is the perfect opportunity for me to smoke some weed. And when I got home, I was like, what is wrong with you? Oh, I'm high. And I was like, oh, hell no, you are gone. Before we got married, he had told me he was a drug addict, a recovering one, and that he was sober because God saved him and blah, 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 and that he was never going to do it again. And one of my rule breakers was like him cheating on me or if he used drugs again. By then, our marriage had been heading down a dark road anyways. So when he decided to get high, it was like, okay, see you later, alligator. And at that time, we had started attending this church called Mars Hill.
Sounds culty.
Yes, it's very culty. So we were struggling to kind of fit it all in, right? We had to go to church. I was serving in the children's ministry at the church at the time. And he was, I don't know, finding a job or something. But when I kicked him out, he moved in with another person that was attending the church. Long story short, I mean, there's a lot of back and forth where we try to get back together and then I find out he's escalated. He started using heroin, he started using cocaine. It just escalated so fast. Like after I kicked him out, I kept blaming myself. He kept telling me it was my fault. By then we had entirely quit Amway because he couldn't do it on his own. And I think the pressure, and I'm kind of projecting some excuses for him because, you know, knowing what I know now about how brainwashed we were in Amway and how committed we were and how he had put so much pressure on himself to succeed. And then when it wasn't succeeding, he had to get some sort of fix. I don't know. I don't know what his decision making was, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was part of it. You know,
there's a lot of triggers in MLM that I would assume would trigger people's addictions and addictive personalities with the dopamine and everything and trying to chase that high. and when not trying to get it, knowing how to get it other ways because you're in recovery, I could see how somebody could spiral.
I know you usually ask people, what was your last straw or something about getting out of Amway? And for me, it was like a really slow progression of tiny little things that just weren't working anymore. And that just faded away. And then like my upline stopped calling me and stopped pestering me. And then me and my husband, before I kicked him out, we had made the decision, okay, we're not going to do Amway anymore. We need the money to raise our kid and yada yada. So Amway was gone, but we had started this church.
Out of one frying pan and into the next frying pan. So,
I don't know if you know much about Mars Hill or have ever heard of Mars Hill, but it was run by this pastor called Mark Driscoll. And he had started a church plant in Ballard. And when me and Chris, number three, had first moved out to that area, we had started attending this church through a mutual friend. The sermons were very unusual. They were a non-denominational evangelical church with Pentecostal, like, kind of threads through it.
Perfect recipe.
Yes. So it was very much like my experience at Christ Memorial Church with Romania, except it was like 10 times bigger and louder and more. It's like going to a concert. What's that church that?
Hillsong.
Yes, it's a lot like Hillsong, okay? But Seattle.
Well, maybe we should look into Mars Hill too. So if anybody was like, wait a second, email me.
Yes. So Mark Driscoll, his preaching style is very in your face. He doesn't sugarcoat anything. He kind of says it how it is. I thought he was interesting because he went through books of the Bible, like one book at a time, and then would do a study on that. And he's kind of a historian too. So he would explain like the background and then go into details that way. But growing up the way, I didn't realize that so much of what he says is very misogynistic, very patriarchal, and just really bad. He would say jokes that were funny, but they would like kind of dig at you and kind of get you to try to think, maybe I'm this person. He was a Calvinist at the time. He doesn't identify as Calvinist anymore, which is basically the belief in a complementary position between a husband and a wife. So like the husband doesn't rule over the wife, but the wife complements him and kind of supports him. So very familiar with that in Amway. It's the same stuff, right?
Yeah. Amway, I believe the founders of Amway were Calvinists.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
100%. So it was already rhetoric I was familiar with, and I didn't see any problem with it, actually, at the time. You know, Mark would say things like, men need to step up and take care of their wives, you know, actually provide for them, stop living in your mom's basement and being a loser, get a wife, provide for your family, do your duty, do your American job, guys, you know. And so I thought that was kind of refreshing because with my husband, I was carrying the load. Like, he couldn't hold a job. I was working my tail off all the time trying to support us. And then when I kicked him out, it was just me. And I was really hoping that was going to like jolt him into some magical new person. Like, maybe the light would shine on him and he would figure it out and actually get a good job and take care of us. But that didn't happen. What happened was he moved into a house. They had these men's homes. So Mars Hill was the church. And then they had group homes for men, for single men. And they'd all live together so that they can be accountable to each other so that they won't go out and have sex before marriage. And they would do Bible studies together. And then there was this other thing called community groups, where you would meet once a week with a group in the community. And then any community groups that got big enough, those would become church plants. So we had one in Shoreline, which is where we ended up attending the most of the time and where I was attending when I kicked him out. He eventually talked me into getting counseling there at the church. And I, since he had been living with this group of guys for so long, they already knew Chris's story. They already knew. He had already told them that I was having an affair, and that's why he did what he did. Because what happened was when we quit Amway, I decided to go back to school. So I started going to school, working on finishing my degree in business this time, not forestry, because I didn't think that was a dream that I could ever attain. So because I was gone at school all the time, he just automatically thought that I was sleeping around. He just wrote me off as being a floozy because I wore jeans.
A lot of insecurity.
Yeah. Like I just wore normal clothes to school, and he thought that I was wearing those clothes to flirt with guys at school. And it was just not my Amway costume, right? It was me. He would say, oh, you're getting so dressed up. Like, why don't we go get busy in the bedroom for a minute first? And I'd be like, no, I have to go to school. You know, I'd push him aside. He was very aggressive. At Mars Hill, Mark would preach all the time about how wives need to be available for their husbands whenever they wanted and to do things. On Lula Rich, there was a comment by, what's the leader's name?
Deanne.
Deanne, about a wife being on her knees.
For 5 minutes every day.
Creates a happy
home. Yeah.
Yes. It's the same thing. Like he actually did a whole sermon on like the Song of Solomon about how, you know, it's a wife loving her husband, and it's very graphic. So I would feel tremendous amounts of guilt just anyway, just by hearing what I was hearing at church and then being accused of this. And yeah, I had made friends at school, but I didn't, they were my first friends since Amway, and I wasn't trying to get them into the business.
Right.
And so he didn't feel included.
He just seems very insecure. He has a lot going on. He has a lot of stuff to fix on his own. He's not ready to be in a relationship that's committed and that's solid. He's not on solid footing himself. And all of his own insecurities he projected onto you because he was afraid.
Yeah.
So obviously this marriage does not work out. You end up getting divorced.
Yep. We get divorced. Well, we went to church counseling, right?
Right. Yeah.
They basically, when I went to counseling, they told me everything was my fault and that I was not a good wife. And that's why he did what he did, and that I had to repent of my sins and change my ways.
It wasn't your fault.
And they kicked me out of the children's service. Yeah. So then I left.
Good riddance.
I moved back home to Kitsap.
But your story does have a happy ending.
Yes. My divorce was finalized in 2014, and then in 2015, I meet my new husband, and we got married and had two kids in 2016 and 2022. I have a COVID baby. My husband now is amazing. He's very calm. I didn't even tell him about my Amway experience until just very recently, because I had written that entire thing out of my life completely. Just, it didn't exist. Like any new friends I had made since then, I never told them about Amway or going to Mars Hill Church. I just wrote it off. None of that happened until recently.
Which leads me to my next point, which I think is very funny, is that you also had the same realization that I did.
Yes.
Watching the same TV show that I did. Tell us about that.
Yes. Yes. So in 2017, I was watching Leah Remini and Mike Rinder's documentary on Scientology called The Aftermath. If nobody has seen that, I'm sure everybody has seen it that listens to you.
Yeah, you guys better watch that.
Yeah, you have to.
I think it's on A&E.
Absolutely.
You can find it online.
Yeah, well, it was on Netflix for a while.
Okay, yeah.
I was sitting there watching David Miscavige on stage doing some sort of conference for Scientology. And he was like up there with the lights and the booming music, and he was hyping up the crowd. And I was like, wait, is this an Amway conference? And I had that cognitive dissonance and was like, this can't be Amway. And then I pause it and I'm like thinking, and I'm like, and then I play it and it's something about, said something Scientology, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh my God, I was in a cult.
Yeah. It's a real feeling. It's a real feeling, that moment that your cognitive dissonance finally breaks through, right? It's been pulsing at the door for so long, knocking, pushing, scratching. And you're like, yes. Stop it. And then one day, just, oh yeah, through the wall. And you're like, oh my God. And it's it. And then you can't unsee any of it. Then you see it everywhere. You're like, oh my God, that's a cult too. You see coercive control everywhere. Once you realize what it is, once you can connect those dots and go, oh, that happened to me. That's exactly how I felt. That's exactly what I said. That's exactly what they said back.
Yeah.
And you go, oh my God.
Yeah. And I've been really realizing that my entire life I've been dealing with it.
Yeah.
From growing up with my stepmom in the Baptist church to, you know, these other church experiences to other MLMs, because I was in more than just Amway. And even watching my kids go to school and like some of the stuff that they're told that they should be doing, like being in a sports team, like, why aren't you in a sports team? Like, you have to be. It's just wild. It's just everywhere. It's absolutely everywhere.
Yeah. It's such a wild thing because you didn't even really come to terms with it. You just shut the door on the closet. You're like, I'm just going to deal with this later, maybe. Maybe if it ever comes up again. And it comes up and it's knocking on the door and your cognitive dissonance is like, we're here, it's time. And that was in 2017, 6-7 years after you had left Amway.
Yeah. Before I met my third husband. Still seems weird to say that.
It's all right.
I had gone through all of my stuff, you know, and I found one of my Amway notebooks, like where I would write notes. And every single thing I had in there was like verbatim. I didn't even have any of my own thoughts anymore. They were completely gone and just replaced with word for word Amway meeting stuff. And so I had thrown that away. I threw it away. I threw all the CDs away. I just locked that door, threw away the key. Nobody was going to know. And then aftermath happens and Leah and Mike are up there blowing the doors open. And I'm just like, okay, I can't just not say anything anymore. I can't. And so I've been kind of since then, even doing RNF for a short time and Beachbody for a short time. Those two things happened before the aftermath as well. So I was like, oh my God, why did I do that again?
Yeah. Well, hey, guess what? The average for us on this show is 3 MLMs. I feel like most people are like, I also did 3. So you're right on the money. You're right where
That's
you should
good.
Be.
I belong.
You're having the right conversations. You're figuring the things out. You got there even without all of the stuff that's out there now.
Yeah.
Like you figured it out before you even found out there was an anti-MLM community and that there were podcasts and movies and documentaries and TV shows. You figured it out. You were like, something's wrong. Something's off.
Yeah. So since then I've been on that path to just kind of uncovering like literally every single aspect of my life and what I went through and just kind of figuring it all out, because I don't want this to happen to my kids. I want to be able to share my story with other people. When I hear people say, oh yeah, I was manipulated into Amway or I was manipulated in this MLM, I'm like, well, exactly how? We have to parse it out very specifically so that people understand if they encounter something else that has these same sort of patterns, they can be recognized. Because when you just say, I was manipulated into something, it doesn't really shed light onto the exact details of how. And that part of it is so, so important. So that's kind of what I'm doing and what I'm doing in my book. I'm hoping I'll be finished with it. I don't have a title yet or anything, but I'll let Roberta know as soon as it's done.
Yes, please do.
Yeah. I might have to self-publish because nobody wants to publish Amway stuff, but hopefully that'll change.
I know. That's the other thing. That'll change.
I hope so.
But yeah, I'm just so proud of you. You're doing it. You're unpacking everything. You're finding answers to questions you didn't know you had, and you're thriving.
Yeah, I really am. I am actually living a real dream that I never thought I would any other way. I couldn't have imagined this is where I'd be now with 3 kids and a great husband who actually loves me and doesn't want to use me for something.
Yeah. And his name isn't Chris, is it?
No, his name's Jordan.
Jordan. We love you, Jordan. Yes. Thank you for not being a Chris. And apologies to any cool Chrises out there. Well, congratulations on your entire journey.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And thank you, Roberta, because honestly, without your podcast and hearing other Amway stories and other MLMs, it would be much more difficult for me to articulate even what I've been through in this type of language. So I really appreciate the work that you've done. It's amazing. It really is.
Thank you.
Give yourself lots of pats on the back.
I couldn't do it without my team, and I couldn't do it without people like you who are willing to come and share these stories. So it's invaluable. So at the end, you know, you listen to the show for a long enough time, you know what we do at the end. We have questions.
I think I prepared.
Are you ready?
Yeah, I prepared some answers.
Oh, look at you. You're so prepared. Okay. Give me one word that encompasses how you feel about multi-level marketing.
Soul-sucking.
Give me a piece of advice to somebody who wants to join an MLM.
Invest in yourself or someone you love instead of investing in just these horrible companies that don't care about you. They just want to make money and that's it. So the best thing you can do is invest in yourself, keep your time. And, you know, if you want to do something, school is a great option. There's all kinds of schools that are non-college, except beware of those coaching things.
Yeah, stay away from weird coaches.
Yeah, or in someone you love.
Yeah, I love that. Invest in something. Imagine if you just put that $100 or whatever you're spending a month, $400, into a savings account that you just like didn't look at until the end of the year. And you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
And you could brag about that instead of your Amway pin or your new recruit or your convention or whatever. I mean, it's just, it's wild to think about. I feel like we all know the answer, but what is the worst MLM in your opinion?
Oh, Amway. Hands down.
Hands down. Give me the hardest lesson that you learned during your time in Amway.
Oh, man. So the pursuit of the dream is a capitalistic fallacy that we've been taught without even knowing that we're being taught this. And the real dream is just living, being here, existing, having our health. That is the dream, right? If you're privileged enough to even start an MLM, you are living the dream already. So just be okay with that. It's hard, though.
I love that. Just existing in the now.
Yes.
Doing what you want when you want. Like, it's, I also feel like you don't really get to learn that lesson until you've been like raked through the valley of butts. And then you get on the other side and you're like, oh, life is so much better over here. What the hell was I thinking?
Yep.
And give me a positive takeaway from your time in Amway.
Oh, I think that I really learned to value time. Not just my time, but the time of others, and really learn to respect that. Because time is something that is more valuable than money. We can't get it back. I wasted so much time in Amway. I missed out on things. Like my 21 years of exploring myself, I missed all of that. You know, I can't get it back. Yeah. So try not to take other people's time, steal it from them, and appreciate the time you have. We don't know when it's going to be gone.
Yeah, I appreciate every second, every minute, every hour, every day.
Yeah. It's funny because even if I, you know, if I see gray hair at some point, I'm like, I'm not going to dye it. I'm not. I'm just going to leave it.
Yeah.
It's showing my wisdom.
As a hairstylist, what I tell people when they start to turn gray is if it's just one or two that you can, you know, just tweeze out, it's not a big deal, then just do that. You know, just tweeze it out. It's not a big deal. When it becomes too much where you're spending maybe I would say more than 10 minutes tweezing out grays, either embrace the gray because it's okay, or make the decision to go down the route of chemicals and coloring and whatever. But it's okay either way.
I know.
And I keep a pair of tweezers in my car for multiple reasons because sunshine is the best natural light. So, you know, whiskers, hairs, eyebrows, grays, whatever. That's my life hack.
Yeah.
Pair of tweezers in the car.
And you know what's funny is that you're doing it for you. You're not doing it to impress or to fall into some sort of like conformed ridiculousness that you had to, in your MLM or whatever it is, right? Those are your, you're doing that for you.
Absolutely. I do everything for me now. And that's the best thing. That's part of your takeaway.
Yep.
It's part of your positive and your negative. Is you have the time and this is what you can do. It's this is freedom.
Yeah.
Like this is true freedom. Like we've already been through it. We saw it. We exposed it. We named it.
So important.
And then we called it by its name. And then we're like, okay, we're moving on. Let's have a glass of lemonade.
Yeah.
And do what we want to do. Read a book. Go to the beach. Take a hike. Whatever. Like that's true freedom. And that's, you know, like that's what I strive for. I don't have anybody telling me, hey, have you bought a box of leggings yet today? That never happens anymore. Did you get on the webinar? I'm like, sorry, I missed it. And the people in my life that I do have webinars with, if I miss it, it's like, oh, you missed it. It's fine. See you next time. It's not like, how dare you miss a meeting? How dare you not show up?
Right.
How dare you? You are relegated to the back.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like that.
Or people talking behind your back and being like, don't do what Roberta's doing.
Yeah, I know. I'm the worst. Well, thank you so, so, so much, Lacey. You were such a joy. I really appreciated this conversation. And thank you for helping us expose Quickstar.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure.
And tell the story of Amway a little bit more.
Yes. And thank you, Roberta. I appreciate it so much for allowing me to go on and on about it.
Anytime. Thank you so much for listening to Life After MLM. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. And follow us on social media at Life After MLM Podcast or visit our website at lifeaftermlmpod.com. And don't forget to check out our Patreon for exclusive content and join the community on Discord. You can find all of the links to follow in our show notes. Life After MLM is produced by Roberta Blevins. Audio editing is done by the lovely Kayla Craven. Video editing by the indescribable RK Gold. And Michelle Carpenter is our triple emerald princess of robots. If you have a story about a cult, fraud, scam, or MLM and want to be on the show, please hit us up. We would love to help you tell your story and start your healing journey in life after MLM. See you next time, Huns.